Yeah, the Futzes, Waxels.
Futzes, Waxels, Telegraphing, and Lips. The Story of Figure Skating.
Hello, and welcome to The Conversation with Susan
and Whitney,
the podcast where two friends from college discuss shared interests, insights, and how we're navigating our lives today.
This is an ongoing conversation about how we're surviving
and thriving.
We discuss the important
and the trivial
and other fun topics in between.
I'm Susan Field, a writer and teacher in Philadelphia.
And I'm Whitney Gould, a writer and marketing director in New Hampshire.
Whitney, you're the kind of friend who I can have a rapid-fire figure skating and Olympics-themed Bitmoji text exchange with.
And Susan, you're the kind of friend who can tell me all of the technical background information behind skating so that when I watch it, I come at it from an informed perspective. So Susan, today's show is a special episode in which we are going to discuss one of your favorite topics, figure skating. Can you tell our listeners more about what they can expect out of this episode?
Yes. So I'm going to give you a crash course on figure skating, and we're going to start with the basics of the sport and then discuss the hot button topic right now, the doping scandal of Kamila Valieva, the 15-year-old Russian prodigy.
I can't wait to discuss this with you, Susan. How and when did you first get interested in figure skating?
Yeah. So I think I always have a recollection of having some interest in skating. Like I sort of have this distant memory of watching the 1992 Olympics on TV, but it wasn't really until 1994 when the Tanya Nancy scandal happened that I really got hooked. I remember coming home from school in fourth grade and walking into the living room and my mom was watching TV and there was this woman crying on the TV screen. And I said to my mom, "Who's that?" And she said, "Nancy Kerrigan." And she mentioned, you know, what happened with the attack. And then that was extremely interesting to me. And then from that point on, skating was all over the news. It was all over TV. Everybody was anxious to see what would happen at the 1994 Olympics with Tanya and Nancy facing off. So I watched that. And just like everyone else, I was on the edge of my seat to see what would happen. And to this day, the 1994 Ladies Short Program is the highest rating Winter Olympic programming of all time. And the Tanya Nancy showdown was the sixth highest rated program in TV history. So it was a really big deal. And right after that, skating continued to remain popular. It was very popular, I would say, at least for 4 or 5 years following the 1994 Olympics. So it was on TV every weekend. I was watching every single made-for-TV competition, every show, every event, and I was just obsessed.
Yeah.
I know I was always asking my parents to tape everything for me. Like every week, my mom had to buy the VHS tapes at the grocery store so that I would have enough tapes to tape whatever was on TV that weekend, and I would just be watching it all throughout the week and cutting everything out of the newspaper. I had clippings hanging up in my room. Like I was just, you know, couldn't be any more into it than I was.
This is so interesting for our listeners to hear about. I remember the Tanya Nancy showdown too, because as you said, it was very, very popular. At the time, Christy Yamaguchi was my favorite figure skater, but I remember when the Tanya Nancy scandal came out, I read a biography of Nancy Kerrigan and used it for my book report in elementary school.
Oh my gosh. That's how
like popular it was, right? So yeah, even me, who wasn't as obsessed with figure skating with you, I remember that those days vividly. So really cool.
Definitely. I was really into Nancy Kerrigan. She was probably my first favorite skater just because I so admired that she was able to come back from the attack and she skated so brilliantly at the Olympics. And I've always been on the side that thinks that she should have won the gold medal over Oksana Bayul. Tanya Harding actually ended up 10th. Actually, she was 8th. She was 10th after the short program, which was the most watched part of the competition, but she was 8th overall. But yeah, so it never really ended up being a showdown between Tanya and Nancy. But I always thought Nancy should have won. And I was actually Nancy Kerrigan for Halloween the next year. And then I think I did some sort of a book report on her at school as well. So yes, was very into Nancy. And then I just continued to watch skating for the next years following and really have never stopped.
Yeah. Susan, did you ever skate yourself? I seem to recall you took a figure skating class for one of your gym credits in college. Is that true?
I did. So as a kid, I just skated recreationally. Like I remember I had a pair of ice skates that was just in my garage at home. Like, I don't know. We just had random sports equipment and like my yard used to freeze over and we used to like skate on some puddles in the yard or like in the driveway or something. But then I remember I got my first pair of skates, like my own nice skates, not like the ones that were in the garage for Christmas when I was 12. And I would just skate recreationally. My mom would take us to some rinks on weekends sometimes. But yes, in college at Penn State, they offered ice skating as a kinesiology class. So I took it at Penn State Altoona. I think I took like skating one and skating two, which was so much fun. And then later on, after I had graduated and I still lived in State College, I took adult skating lessons. That was also really fun. It's great exercise. Good workout too.
Yes, very good workout. I went skating over Christmas a few years ago with my sister-in-law, and it was not as easy as I had remembered. Let's just say that.
No, it's definitely not easy. It's definitely a sport or an activity that you need to have lessons for. You can't just step on the ice and know what you're doing. You really do need some kind of coaching, at least to show you basic stroking, you know, how to not fall, how to bend your knees. And actually, speaking of not falling, I mean, you don't want to fall. You need to know the proper techniques so that you don't. But one of the first things you learn when you take a skating lesson is how to fall.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, that was one of the first things we learned whenever I took lessons, because there is a right way to fall and there is a wrong way to fall, obviously, so you don't break something.
I probably fall for sure all the wrong ways. Again, it was way harder when I went skating over Christmas a few years ago than I had remembered from childhood. So, Susan, who were some of your favorite skaters growing up and now? I think I know one of these answers for sure.
Oh, yeah. Well, I talked about Nancy. Scott Hamilton, I always loved his skating. He was a skater everybody will remember that did the backflip in every performance that he did. And he's just always so much fun to watch. I love Brian Boitano. Michelle Kwan is definitely my favorite skater still to this day. I mean, there's no one that can ever compete with the level of admiration and love I had for her skating. But I love so many other skaters over the years, like Todd Eldridge of the U.S., and Elvis Stoiko of Canada. I love Jeremy Abbott. He's also from the United States. Stefan Lambiel from Switzerland. I loved Merrill Davis and Charlie White, who won the Olympics in 2014. I like the Japanese skaters, Yuzuru Hanyu, the two-time Olympic champion, Shoma Uno, who was just third at the last Olympics. And of course, Nathan Chen, the most recent Olympic champion. I've been watching him skate for a long time, and I was so thrilled to see him win. It was an awesome moment.
Yes, he was fantastic at the Olympics, and I think he changed Olympic figure skating fashion for men, is all I'm going to say.
Yeah, and we will definitely get into the fashion, but I want to say really quickly that right before Nathan skated in the Olympics, there was a little feature that interviewed him talking about who he was influenced by, and he mentioned Michelle Kwan. And I was like, all right, well, if I liked Nathan before, now I love him, because he's also inspired by Michelle Kwan. And it really made sense to me that those two skaters would be connected. They're both Chinese American. And that was really cool to me that my current favorite skater is inspired by my other favorite skater. So love Nathan. Yes. Yep.
And you love Michelle Kwan so much.
Oh, absolutely. Yes, I do. I know. I think that Nathan Chen winning actually made up a little bit of the pain of Michelle Kwan never winning the Olympics. I felt like in some way it was a little bit redemptive. I don't know if anyone else felt that way, but I just felt like this win helped me feel a little bit better about her not winning.
So good. So good, Susan. So Susan, what are some of the basic things that people should know about competitive figure skating?
Yes. Well, one of the first things people always ask me, they commonly say like, oh, I saw the couples skating, but they don't know the difference. There's actually two different types of couples skating. So in addition to the men's skating and the women's skating, of course, there's also pair skating and ice dance. And those are the two that are commonly confused. And there is a difference between the two.
What is the difference between pair skating and ice dance, Susan?
All right. So while both disciplines skate with a partner, the difference is that pair skating includes side-by-side jumps or throw jumps. There's side-by-side spins, twists, in which the man catapults the woman into the air and then catches her. There's throws, like throw jumps. Ice dancing does not have those elements. They do have like partner spin, but not like side-by-side spins. There's no jumps. Both disciplines do have lifts, but the lifts are different. So in ice dance, the man can lift the woman above his head, but his arms have to be slightly bent. And if his arms were straight, it would be a deduction. In pair skating, the man lifts the woman over his head, but his arms are straight. When I first started watching skating, I don't believe that ice dancers were allowed to lift the woman over the shoulders. The rules have evolved a little bit over the years, but you're never going to see like the crazy overhead lifts in ice dancing that you would see in pairs. So also, yeah. Whitney, in ice dancing, there's obviously a great focus on dance because
right.
ice dancing was inspired by ballroom dance. So you're going to see traditional dance patterns and their acquired element in what's called the short dance, which is the first part of the competition. Each discipline in figure skating has two parts. It's either called like the short program. It used to be called the original program. And ice dance is called the short dance. You might see patterns like the Golden Waltz, the Ravensburger Waltz, the Tango Romantica. This season, the required pattern was the Midnight Blues. I would not expect a casual viewer to know these patterns. I don't even know them. I just know them because the commentators are telling me that it's happening. But you would be able to notice a close hold between partners and movement that might look like what you would see on the dance floor. Are you following so far?
Yes. So what I'm taking from this is ice dance is more like an ice version of ballroom dance, and potentially pair skating is kind of a more, I don't want to say athletic or
like acrobatic
version of skating.
Yeah, definitely. I would say acrobatic is a good term. I think they're both equally difficult, but in different ways. Also in ice dancing, you're going to see something called twizzles, and those are fast synchronized turns on one foot. You wouldn't see that in pair skating. So that's really difficult. But I think next time you watch skating, pay attention to some of the things that I mentioned. And I think it might be easier to tell the difference between the two.
One of my biggest questions about skating, and I know that you know the answer to this, is how can you tell the difference between the jumps? I personally can't unless the commentators are telling me what jump just happened.
Right. So there's two different types of jumps. There's edge jumps and toe jumps. So on a skate blade, I'm sure you know if you've been skating before that there's something called a toe pick, which is like the spiky thing at the end of the skate, right?
Right.
So the toe jumps are the jumps that use the toe pick to assist in vaulting into the air. You'll notice the skater pick in with that part of their blade. Whereas the edge jump requires skaters to push off from the edge of their blade to lift off into the air. So,
oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah, edge jumps are the axle, the loop, and the sow cow, and the toe jumps are the Lutz flip and the toe loop. So if you watch closely next time you watch skating, you should be able to see whether the skater uses the toe pick to vault or if they're pushing off of their edge. So that will automatically help you narrow down if it's an edge jump or a toe jump. Make sense?
Yeah, I'll have to pay better attention.
Yeah, so how to differentiate the jumps beyond that is to see what edge the skater takes off on. So on a skate, you're standing flat on your blades perpendicular to the ice or the floor or whatever. That's called the flat of your blade, right? But there's also edges. Each blade has four edges. And an edge is created by the lean of the body. So whenever you're leaning either inside or outside, that's an edge. So let's pretend, Whitney, that you're skating around a circle. If you were skating around and leaning toward the inside of the circle, you would be skating on a forward inside edge. Does that make sense that you'd be leaning to the inside, right?
Okay. And you're going forward.
Correct.
Which is important.
Yes, and you learn how to do that. That's one of the early things in beginning ice skating lessons is to learn how to skate on the circle. That's how you would start to learn like forward crossovers. So if you were leaning inside going forward, that's a forward inside edge. If you were leaning the other direction, like skating away from the circle, like leaning outside, that would be a forward outside edge. And then it's the same thing for the back of your blade. So the back of your blade has an inside and an outside to the edges, right? So that would be like a backward inside edge and a backward outside edge. The inside edge, of course, again, faces the inside of the circle. The backward edge faces to the outside of the circle. So what edge you're taking off on depends what direction you're facing as you're taking off. So like, for example, the triple Lutz is a backward takeoff. The skater glides on a long back outside edge before vaulting with the toe pick. Sometimes you might notice the skater even looking over their shoulder before vaulting because they're seeing if the coast is clear, but they're taking off from the back outside edge. The axle takes off from the forward outside edge, and it's the only jump that takes off forward. So that one actually should be the most easy to spot because, yes, it's the only jump that does that. Does that make sense so far? Yeah.
Interesting. I do recall watching skaters kind of look over their shoulder too. So now I'm going to pay attention when they do that to see.
Yeah. So the flip is also from a backward takeoff, but it uses an inside edge with a toe pick assist. And this one, people always ask me about the flip. They're like, oh, so do they flip upside down? It's like, no, despite the name, there's actually no flipping involved. I'm not exactly sure where that name comes from, but the skater does not go upside down. The loop jump takes off from the backward outside edge. The sow cow is a backward inside edge, and the toe loop is a backward outside edge using the toe pick to vault. So Whitney, I know this sounds like a lot. And also sometimes jump entrances can be tricky because a really good skater will almost disguise the takeoff of a jump because they're using all these transitions, which are movements and choreography in and out of a jump that will make the jump look seamless and organic. Like it's just one continuous flowing thread of movement. But if you do watch really carefully, you should still be able to see if they're using a toe or an edge. And you can pay attention to what direction they're facing when they take off.
This is such good information, Susan. And I thank you for saying that good skaters will disguise how they're taking yes. off, because even when I was trying to pay attention during the Olympics, I was like, I don't know. They did it so fast. I have no idea what just happened there that was different from the previous jump.
Right. And especially now under this current judging system, the skaters are actually rewarded for using those transitions because it makes their jumping more difficult. And I'll explain why in a second. So if a skater isn't using transitions and choreography into a jump and they're just like standing still and you can clearly see that they're doing nothing else but setting up a jump, that's actually called telegraphing. You should be able to watch skating and not see a telegraphed entrance. It should just be like the skater comes out of nowhere, like out of footwork or something like that, or out of a spread eagle. But if you see a skater like definitely setting up a jump, that's called telegraphing. They receive more points for doing jumps sort of seamlessly out of transitions and choreography. Everything should be seamlessly blended.
So there were a couple skaters at the Olympics this year who didn't use as much choreography. So they potentially would be doing more telegraphing than the skaters who were a lot more fluid in their steps and their choreography and their transitions.
Yes, that's right. That's right. I would say skaters who maybe don't have that much of an artistic sensibility and are more just about jump, 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 you might see more telegraphing for them because they simply just don't have the level of choreography that some of the more sophisticated skaters would have.
Right.
So Whitney, things get even more technical, but this might be going into the weeds a little, but I do think the weeds can enlighten us. And it's also relevant because later on, I'm going to talk about the judging of the Russian skaters, and this will be important. This piece of information is important. So skaters with improper technique can actually take off on the wrong edge for a planned jump, and that completely changes the jump, right? Do you see how each jump is based on a certain edge? So yes. If you change edges, it can yes. change the jump. Thus, it would invalidate their planned content, or at least that's what's supposed to happen. And I'll get into yes. this in a little bit, but the controversy surrounding wrong edge takeoffs was something that happened during the Olympics. And yes, I will get into that. But going back to the technique, if a skater planning to do a triple Lutz on the back outside edge, if they rock over to the inside edge right when they take off, that actually changes to a flip jump. So in skating jargon, that's called a flutz because the flip turns into a Lutz. Yes. So skaters are supposed to receive a deduction if they flutz because that means they had improper technique. A flip yeah. is actually less difficult than the Lutz too, so it's worth less points, but it's more so the fact that they'd planned something else and their technique failed and it switched to a different jump. That's something you would receive a deduction on or should. The reverse is also true, Whitney. So there's a term called lip, which I really don't hear commentators mention very often, but if a skater is intending to do a triple flip, supposed to take off on a flip on a back inside edge, right? But if they switch to a back outside edge on their takeoff, it changes to a Lutz, right? So now it's called a lip because the flip became a Lutz. So although technically the Lutz is more difficult and you would think that would be like, oh, an upgrade, but no, the problem is that the skater was intending for it to be a different jump entirely. So even if that jump is landed cleanly, technically it's a mistake because that's not what they intended to do, right?
Yeah. So you can't like earn extra points in the middle.
No, you shouldn't. No. And also the thing is with skating, you're not supposed to repeat jumps. I mean, you can repeat, but then the second one has to be in combination. So say you plan two triple Lutzes. You could do one triple Lutz by itself, but then your second triple Lutz has to be in combination, like a triple Lutz double toe. So if you just keep doing all these failed edges and maybe you end up having like four triple Lutzes, that's violating the rules. So you really need to stick to what you intended to do. And that means your technique has to be good enough. You know, if your technique is sound, you shouldn't be switching over to a different edge before you jump, right?
Yeah.
Your technique has failed you. Yeah.
Well, also, I'm assuming that because there are certain requirements for jumps in certain programs or like there are certain requirements for certain elements, maybe not always jumps. And you kind of have to, I assume, submit that in advance, right? You have to tell the judges what jumps you're planning to do. So you can't just like surprise people by saying you're going to do a bunch of like single jumps and then throw a bunch of quads in the program, right?
I mean, you could, but you're right that usually you do submit your content ahead of time. That's how the commentators know what you're doing. And you'll even see in the corner of the screen of the score box, they'll have the element listed of what you're doing. And the judges watch practices too, so they do know what you're expecting to do. So if you change something, they would know. You can change your content, but I think it's also difficult for the skater because that would mean that you hadn't practiced that. And it's always harder to do something you hadn't practiced. But my point overall is if you're changing edges and doing different jumps, you shouldn't be rewarded for that. And that's actually something that happened in the Olympics that I will get into as we get into that in a little bit. But Whitney, to wrap up this analogy, you know how people have a good face for radio?
Yes.
Well, I don't think skating has a good face for radio because it really is something you need to see. It's not something you can just listen to. So I know this sounds complex to describe it, but if you were actually watching it and seeing a video of the different jumps, I think this would make sense. So you and listeners can head over to YouTube. If you Google figure skating jumps, you're going to get a ton of videos that give you a detailed breakdown on each one. And they'll show you up close. You'll be able to see what I'm talking about. And there was one video in particular that I watched yesterday by Jason Brown, who was at the most recent Olympics. And I think that video was really helpful. He showed you how to do each jump. So I can link that video in the show notes.
Awesome. I do have a question about one of the jumps that is still perplexing to me. So the commentators on skating always mention how an axel jump is such a difficult jump, and it's like this beast of a jump that if you can manage triple axel for women, it's like a big deal. And I don't know, I guess the men probably do, like quad axel is for them the big deal, right? So why is it so difficult?
Well, first of all, I want to say that actually no one has done a quad axel yet. However, you're probably hearing that because Yuzuru Hanyu in the most recent Olympics, he did try a quad axel. No one has successfully landed it yet, but it was his goal to try to be the first one to land it. So when he entered the competition, not really in contention for a medal, he decided to just go for it and throw it in. But he did not land that jump. But, you know, that might be something we'd see in the future. But I think it's just crazy difficult. But, you know, I guess never say never.
Yeah.
I should preface all of this by saying that I have never jumped in my life. So I can't really say any of these things about jumps from experience. But from years of watching skating and listening to the commentators, I've heard different explanations about why the axel is so tough. And people generally say that it's scarier to jump forward than it is to jump backwards. And also you're taking off on an edge. So you're not being assisted by a toe pick, which the toe pick's kind of like a pole vault, right? Like you have something to assist you in the takeoff, whereas the edge, you don't have anything to assist you. So it could be kind of scary because if your takeoff goes wrong, you could just slip on that edge and completely wipe out going forward. And actually, if that happens, it's called a waxel.
Oh my goodness. There's so many terms I'm learning that I've never heard before.
In fact, I listened to a podcast, which is two sisters that live in Canada, and they recap every skating event, and their podcast is called Flutzes and Waxels. So
hilarious.
Yeah. But anyway, all the skating jumps land backwards. So since the axel starts out forward, there's an extra half rotation that needs to take place in order for the skater to land backwards. And that extra half rotation is more than the other jumps. So that's why it's more difficult because, you know, an average triple is three rotations, but a triple axel is 3.5. So, right.
Oh,
like the
single
axel,
right,
1.5, double axel, 2.5, triple axel, 3.5. And that extra half rotation is tough. It makes it more challenging. And especially for women, you need so much strength and height to get into the air to rotate that many times. I think that's why it's more difficult for women is just from a strength perspective.
It's still like you're the best of the best if you can land a triple axel.
Yeah, I mean, I will say it is getting a little more common. Like in the last Olympics of 2018, Mariah Nagasu of the U.S. landed the triple axel, and it was a huge deal. And I could be wrong, but I think she was the only woman that was landing a triple axel at that Olympics. And this past one we had, I'm thinking just off the top of my head, at least like 4 or 5 skaters that were doing a triple axel. So it's definitely increased just since the last Olympics.
Yeah, because competition gets stronger every time we have an Olympics, I would imagine.
Yeah, definitely. The level is being pushed as we continue to progress.
So, Susan, where do the names of these jumps come from? Like, why is it called an axel or a toe loop or a lutz or a sow cow? Like, what is all that about?
Yes, people always ask me that too, because they're like, what the heck is a sow cow? And so a sow cow, it isn't really anything. It's the last name of a person who performed the jump, Ulrich Sow Cow. Oh. He was the first one to successfully land it. The jump is named after him. He was a Danish-born Swedish skater. He won 10 world championships, and he was an Olympic champion between 1901 and 1911. Whitney, he actually won the Olympics. Ice skating was still in the Summer Olympics.
Oh.
The first Winter Olympics wasn't until 1924. So in the 1908 Summer Olympics, ice skating was included. And that's when Ulrich Saukow won. Little known fact, the namesake of the axel jump is Axel Paulsen. He was a Norwegian skater who landed the jump at the 1882 World Championships. The Lutz is named for an Austrian skater now named Alois Lutz. I'm not sure if I'm getting his first name right, but he landed the jump in 1913. The toe loop is obviously because the skater uses the toe pick to vault. I have to be honest that I'm not entirely sure where the loop and the flip name come from.
Yes. So, Susan, let's talk about quads for a second, because it seems from my less informed perspective that they're getting to be kind of controversial, especially when it comes to women's skating. So can you tell me more about this?
Yes. And Whitney, I could talk about this for more than a second. I think I could literally do a whole episode about quads or a whole podcast just about quad jumping and women's skating, but I'll try to narrow it down to a few points. So first of all, right now in the senior ranks, like what we just saw in the Olympics, the only skaters who are performing these quad jumps are out of one skating camp, which is Eteria Tuberidze, her camp in Russia. And she's the coach of Camilla Valieva, the skater under fire right now for the positive doping test. So yes. The investigation of Valieva's performance enhancing drug use is still happening right now, but obviously it does make you question whether or not the other skaters that she trained with, two of whom are medalists at the Olympics, makes you question whether or not they were also doping at one point or another, thus enabling them to be able to do those incredibly difficult quads that no one else in the world is doing. It's really curious to me that these skaters doing these seemingly superhuman athletic feats are with the same coach who is now being investigated for doping. So my point is that right now it's even in question if the feats that these girls are doing are even legitimate, or are they cheated?
Yes.
So that's one thing.
When you were talking about telegraphing and you have to kind of hide that you're taking off for a jump a little bit, or you have to make it a smooth transition, so you might not always know. There was definitely one of the skaters that you're referring to who it was very clear was only focused on jumps and nothing in between.
Are you talking about Alexandra Trusova, the one that got second?
Yes.
Yes. Oh, yes. And I will get into her in a little bit, but I totally agree with you on that front. Whitney, another controversy surrounding the quad jumps is that in order to do these jumps, only a particular type of body is really successful in doing them. And that is a pencil thin prepubescent body, which raises health concerns. You have to wonder what these skaters are eating, if anything, and if what they're eating is even giving them proper sustenance that they actually need to be a healthy athlete in person. And these skaters from Russia that we saw in the Olympics are young high school age girls who are in their formative years, and they need proper nutrition to develop their bodies and minds properly. And it makes you question whether or not that's happening, right? Like, are they healthy
physically or mentally?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And several skaters coming out of Tuberidze's camp experienced devastating injuries this year. And these are two skaters that we did not see at the Olympics. One skater fell on her hip in a competition in Japan. She was hurt so badly she had to be carried off the ice. Another skater fell on a triple axel in practice, broke her arm. A couple months later, she fell again, broke her other arm. I mean, I understand where if you're hitting the ice, falling on a jump that's high impact, and I can get where that would hurt or potentially be harmful, but it does make you question how their bones are immediately breaking, right? Like, why are their bones so frail that they're breaking as soon as they fall? It does question nutritional value, right? And if this is healthy.
And proper training and...
Yeah. And I think a lot of it also has to do with the technique that they're being taught. And I'm going to talk about that in a little bit too. You know, if you are doing improper technique, you're falling because your technique is improper. That could be something. Or if you're training in a way that is not the right technique, you're going to get an injury a lot more easily. So, you know, all of this makes me question, like, you know, are doing these quad jumps worth sacrificing a skater's health? Like, you know, is it worth it for these quads? Like, at this point, I just think, yes, they're cool to watch and it is amazing what they're doing, but, you know, is this worth it?
It needs to be done safely.
Yeah. And in other skating interviews that I've listened to and read, there was a report at one point or another that one of the skaters was eating only powdered meal replacements. In another interview, I heard that at the 2018 Olympics, the gold and silver medalists, who were also with the same coach as Camilla Valieva, they weren't allowed to drink water. They could only swish it around in their mouths and spit it out. I mean, again, like, I don't know if that's 100% true, but that's what I've heard in several different reports, and that's not healthy. And I mean, I've heard some of Tugrid's top athletes from the Sochi Games retired before the age of 20, one of her top athletes, because she cited an eating disorder as one of the main reasons. So these stories raise a lot of questions about what's going on in that coaching camp in Russia. And
yes.
Yeah, Whitney, I mean, disordered eating in sports is not uncommon, especially in sports like skating and gymnastics, in which your body does need to be smaller and leaner in order to do certain things in the air, like fast rotations. But to have all the majority of the stories like this coming out of one skating camp is alarming.
Yes, agreed. And I think especially after some of the things that we witnessed this past Olympics on TV, like the reactions of the skaters to some of these events, or just like lack of comfort and emotional support we kind of witnessed that these skaters were receiving when the world's cameras were on them. I can't imagine what's possibly happening when there are no cameras around.
Oh, I know. I think that's the part that's most scary. I mean, you can definitely tell that there's some unhealthy behaviors and mindsets going on in that camp. And another issue surrounding the quad jumps and women's skating is related to the shift in the focus toward the technical side and in the rewarding of improper technique. So if you watch the Olympics, you saw the influx of quads being performed. And this is a huge change from the last Olympics. Actually, there was no quads in the women's event in the last Olympics. And at this Olympics,
yeah,
you noticed that, right?
Yeah, I thought only men were doing quads until this past Olympics, and I was so surprised to see so many quads on the women's side.
Yeah, it is surprising, and I think other skaters at the Olympics who didn't have the quads couldn't even compete at the same level because they didn't have that high level of points that the quads was earning for these Russian skaters was just crazy. Like, no one could compete with that. So then you end up seeing dominance of the Russian skaters. This is subjective, but I guess most would say that Valieva does have some artistic sensibility, and so does Anna Shcherbakova, who won the Olympics, but so much attention is being focused on the technical fireworks that other aspects of the skating are being ignored or overshadowed. And like we said with Alexandra Trusova, she only cared about the jumps. She really had absolutely no artistic, it wasn't a program. She was just jumping.
She was just jumping on skates.
Yeah, exactly. And so then the problem is that sport is becoming all about the jumps and less about anything else, and it's becoming unbalanced. I mean, young skaters coming up are seeing that Trusova is being rewarded for jump, 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 jump. And of course, they're going to want to do that too. Why would they put all the time and effort into this like beautiful artistic program if they're not being rewarded for that? So I think it sets a really bad precedent.
Jumps are hard, but so are some of the other more artistic elements that are performed in these routines. So why are you wasting time as a young skater, you might think, trying out these cool artistic fluid transitions and spins and other things that don't have the high point totals?
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly it. And secondly, the scoring of these quads and the other jumping passes aren't currently being scored fairly. So I follow this YouTube skating show called The Skating Lesson. After the women's event, Polina Edmonds, who was an Olympian for the U.S. in 2014, she was on the show, and she was talking about how the technique of Atiri Tubridze's skaters is actually incorrect.
Oh.
So that's another factor, yeah, that could be contributing to the serious injuries of her skaters, is they're not learning proper jump technique. And so they are having a short shelf life as an athlete because they're getting seriously injured. And also once their bodies start to change and they grow, they can no longer do this technique that only works for these prepubescent girls, right?
Yes.
That's alarming too. But in the interview, which I'll put in the show notes, Polina talks about this concept of pre-rotation, which is when the jump rotation begins on the ice before the skater takes off, which is therefore a cheated jump.
Oh, so that's one okay.
Thing. Yeah. And that one's hard. Even me being a skating fan for many, many years, that's even something that's tough for me to notice. I was watching a video on YouTube and I could see it in slow motion. There was a comparison between a skater that was pre-rotating on the ice and someone who was not, and you could see the difference, but that's hard to catch just with the naked eye. But point is, that is a cheated jump. And also the edges that the Russian skaters are taking off from are most of the time seems to be incorrect. So that invalidates the jump, right? So right. Polina was saying like, yes, they're performing these difficult jumps, but they're not performing the correct jump. They're not being performed correctly. And the judges are not deducting points for that. So they're rewarding this improper technique, which the same thing we were saying with it perpetuates this bad precedent, because now why would skaters change their technique, or why would young skaters growing up not want to do the same thing that the Russians are doing? Because they're being rewarded for doing it wrong. So like, why would you do something different? Right.
So is it just that the judges can't see this because there's no like slow-mo or instant replay or something?
There is instant replay. That's a really good question. I think that's a larger issue that I don't even know that I have the expertise on. It raises questions of, is there some bias going on? Like, are they just choosing not to see it? Are they trying to prop up the Russian skaters? I mean, Whitney, there's so much I could go into about how Tuberidze is actually like a great politician. She has so much pull with the judges that there might be some behind the scenes sort of networking or bribing or.
Interesting.
I'm not really an expert to talk about it, but this is not uncommon for figure skating to have a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes where it's unfair and different coaches are carrying a lot of weight that influence what the judges do.
Will we be seeing a documentary series on this Russian coach in the future, potentially?
Oh my gosh, I would think so. She's currently being investigated and I'm so curious to see what they find out, but she's a fascinating person in the sport, but also seems pretty shady.
Yes, yes. I think we can all agree after watching the Olympics that she seems pretty shady.
Yeah, definitely. And if you want more information about the misjudging and the wrong technique, I would definitely recommend listening to Polina's interview on the skating lesson. And she brought up a couple of really good points about how if the judges had actually been scoring Alexandra Trusova, the one that won the silver medalist that was crying afterwards when she didn't win, if they had been judging her correctly all along, she never would have been given this unrealistic expectation that she was the best and she could win with 5 quads. Yeah. Like, she should never have been given the scores that she had been given over the last few seasons to give her that impression.
Yeah.
Right? Like, her scores were not reflecting the reality of what she was doing, which is improper technique. And not having a program, right?
Yeah.
So, like, while I respect her athleticism and I think she's super gutsy and courageous for going what she went for, her planned content, she's not the second best skater in the world by a long shot. And I think the judges really did her a disservice by letting her believe that she was by scoring her inaccurately for a few seasons now. And I think overall, the judging in figure skating is in need of some serious reform so that these quads are not worth as many points, so that they're judged more fairly, and improper technique should not be rewarded. I think that really needs to be looked at and addressed.
Yes.
But anyone who wants more information about this should go to YouTube to check out the skating lesson. And I will link that in the show notes.
Thanks for listening to part one of our figure skating episode. In part two, we will recap the Beijing Olympics and address the doping scandal that rocked the Olympic Games. And listeners, if you can believe it, the figure skating season is still not over. The World Figure Skating Championships will take place in Montpellier, France, from Monday, March 21st to Sunday, March 27th. TV coverage begins Wednesday on the USA Network. Check out our show notes for a link to the full TV schedule. Join us next time when we pick up where we left off and continue the conversation.
Check us out on Instagram at Susan and Whitney or send us an email at susanandwhitney@gmail.com.
That's S-U-S-A-N, the word and, W-H-I-T-T-N-E-Y.
Our awesome music is by Offshane and our scripting and editing is by us.
Talk to you later.
Yay, I think we did a good job.